My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Really believe Ole Miss is, it should be as good as advertised and has the schedule to produce the results that everyone down there is hoping for.
How much did it surprise to you? How much did it surprise you to see Michigan at 8?
I guess it's not shocking because Donovan Edwards is back and because
that defense
they do have,
is still incredible.
Still incredible, man. They've got high level guys at every level of that defense. But it's going to be tough because 15-0. You had J.J. McCarthy, you had Blake Corum, you had Jim Harbaugh, you had an easy schedule. Well, they don't have any of those things this year. They've got a tough schedule, actually, certainly relative to what they had a year ago. But I think it's a perfect time for Sherrone Moore to be taking over because with the schedule Michigan plays, I mean, a 9-3 playoff bid is within the realm of possibility. And so, you know, there's a handful of teams and coaches that I think are winners of playoff expansion this year, and Michigan is one of them because it gives them a chance to feel like they are still nationally relevant and in the national title picture, even though there's clearly going to be a little bit of a drop-off. But of course, hey, if the NCAA comes out and tries to hit them with a postseason ban in the next couple of weeks, maybe that changes. But I think if you kind of take away the whole NCAA investigation, then this Michigan team could still be in the playoff mix without a doubt.
Do you think they got it right with number one, Georgia?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, because, you know, Ohio State's got to replace a quarterback, and, you know, they've got a new offensive coordinator there in Chip Kelly, who is he still the offensive mind that we regarded him as 10 years ago? I don't know.
So
I think without a doubt.
I've kind of, admittedly, I've struggled with that question. I think Chip's biggest mistake was leaving Oregon, because the things that he doesn't like about college football, Oregon largely handles it himself, which is he doesn't really want to recruit. He kind of wants to scheme it up and just kind of be a ball coach. Well, there's not many jobs that allow you to do that. Like, I don't really think there's an SEC job that grants you the right to do that. I don't even really know in the Big Ten if there's a job that allows you to do it. Like, you're going to just have to be on it recruiting-wise. I think when you look at scheme and stuff, I still think he does some pretty good stuff. I think the difference is he just doesn't have the talent. He has not had the talent to make it look like, oh my God, wow. But I am open to the idea at Ohio State. He's gonna, like, to me, this is the perfect case study because there's going to be no talent excuse this year. And so if we see that it's still just kind of clunky and whatnot, I will be open to the idea, hey, what he does, everybody else is just caught up to. I still think pretty highly of him as an offensive mind, though.
Well, this is a massive prove-it year because there's no shortage of talent. We're like, I was filling out my CBS Sports All-American ballot this week, and I didn't know who to put on there from the Ohio State running back room, because when you got Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, either one of those are All-American caliber players, but the fact is they're both in the backfield, so they're going to be splitting carries, they're going to be splitting catches. So I actually didn't put either one on there because, you know, I think they're going to be used so evenly, and the touches are going to be distributed, and there's going to be such a balance there that an embarrassment of riches, if you will. I didn't even know which one to put as an All-American, so I just went with guys who are more like the bell cows for their teams. And, you know, the receiver room is still up to par, but, man, Will Howard at quarterback there is something that really gives me a lot of pause, because I just think he was a replacement-level type of guy in the Big 12, or maybe slightly above that. And now you go into an Ohio State program with such a long track record of elite quarterback play, and I'm not even totally convinced he's better than the guy he's replacing,
yeah.
Kyle McCord, who's going to be the starter at Syracuse this year. So, I mean, that's my biggest question with Ohio State, without a doubt.
Cobb, we appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, guys.
That is David Cobb of CBS Sports. When we come back, we're going to get into the list. Team USA is in action. They're in the first half. They lead Brazil 40-29. We'll tell you about it when we come back. Get more into the Olympics and the NFL when we come back during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Let's get into the list.
Jeffrey and company make a list of the biggest stories, both good and bad, that we need to talk about. This is The List.
You just made the list!
Presented by Birdies 901, Memphis's place for virtual golf. The List on 92.9.
Team USA.
You just made the list!
Yeah, that's right. The men's national team is in action tonight over in France, I should say, this afternoon here locally. Just a shade before the end of the first half, the U.S. leads Brazil 52-36. So far, the big story is the starting lineup. That seems to be what we care the most about each and every game. The Team USA went with the same starting lineup that we've seen most of the Olympics so far, which is Steph Curry, Drew Holiday, Devin Booker, Joel Embiid, and LeBron James. Everyone seems to be most focused on Embiid so far. Embiid having a pretty good evening, afternoon, however you want to say it. 11 points and 5 total boards. Also, Devin Booker added 9 points for the starters. Off the bench, we have seen so far Tatum, Durant, Bam Adebayo, Anthony Davis, as well as Anthony Edwards. Derek White has also made an appearance so far. We have not seen Tyrese Halliburton. But overall, they're up 16 with about 2.5 minutes to go. If indeed they were to prevail, they would take on Serbia for the third time this summer. They played them in group play as well as during the showcase. Serbia got by Australia today 95-90 in a game that went to overtime. Also a game in which they trailed by as many as 24. I give Australia credit, Phil, because when they gave up the huge lead, I thought we were going to see, oh, that's like just die. They fought back, they got it to overtime, and then they died in overtime.
That's very impressive.
We lost.
Yep.
Little Mike, there you are.
Hey, Brinkin. Yeah, very impressive.
Also, today in quarterfinal action, Germany, who has been, I think, pretty much the second most impressive team thus far, they knock off Greece, so Giannis Antetokounmpo out of the Olympics, 76-63. And then a highly competitive game between France and Canada. France prevails 82-73. Phil, there was this nice sequence where France really controlled much of the game, but then Canada was starting to get back in it, and our boy just jacked up. Just a horrific. He tried to, like, in fairness to Dylan, he tried to pass it off like 3 or 4 times, but it was like a flashback to the Lakers series where France was like, no, that's the guy we want to shoot. And then he got like his little 8-footer just swatted into oblivion. They never really recovered. I think it was interesting with Canada because to me, the thing that really stood out to them is everyone kept pointing out guard play. And they just did not really get anything from DeJounte Murray. Shea gave him 27, but it was on 9 of 19. I don't know. I was expecting more from Canada in this Olympics, and I just left wanting more. I thought this was going to be kind of like their arrival moment, and eh.
You know, it's funny. I ran into NBA official Michael Smith earlier this week, and here's a guy who's been in the NBA for 30-plus years, and he's telling me he was watching the games with Canada, and he said, this guy's from Canada?
Yes.
He said there must have been 4 or 5 guys that he had no clue that they had Canadian background.
Yeah, I think Nimhart took. Yeah, I mean, I didn't, because I always just think of him as a Gonzaga guy, but Nimhart's obviously Canadian. SGA, obviously Canadian. RJ Barrett, also Canadian. I feel like most people knew Olynyk was.
Yeah.
I think only because, like, he's just been around so long. But do people, I know we know, obviously, because we've had Dylan since the beginning, but is it common knowledge Dylan's Canadian?
I think you're saying it right. I think because we are aware of that, we know it. But no, I don't think most people would know that.
The other big moment in this game, if I had to distill this game down into one sequence when you were watching it, Canada's kind of flipped momentum in the last 2 minutes, and they're trying to apply the pressure, and France gets two offensive rebounds, and Evan Fournier throws up a shot from 40 feet, and it goes in. Like, it was miss. They just couldn't get the rebound. They couldn't get the stop. And to me, like, that was kind of the key. The entire time, France was just getting every single, like, the 50-50 balls, every single one of them went to France.
But as you watch that, and what you know of France, did it surprise you? Did you think France was the team that would win that game?
I was a little surprised because obviously you knew they'd have the advantage inside, but I felt like the entire tournament, I kept waiting for Canada's guards to just score, and they really hadn't. So in terms of all that surprising, no, because that was also, I mean, the other thing in fairness to Canada, like, that's the only true road game there. I mean, it was like, that felt like when you're watching it, that felt like kind of a playoff game in the terms of you're on the road. That place was packed. It was clear who they were rooting for. In terms of, like, as the game was playing out, because I don't think France ever gave up the lead. Do I think the right team won 100%? I think the entire time I kept thinking Canada was going to be better than they are, and I think that's just where I netted out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a good run. I mean, they got as far as I guess most people thought they might. But yeah, that was impressive.
Team USA is really turning it on here to close out the first half. They now have extended the lead to 25. They lead 61-36 with 6 seconds remaining in the first half. But this was overall, the entire bracket broke Team USA's way. Germany and France, which have probably been the most consistent other good teams, wind up in the bottom part. Canada was obviously the team that you could be afraid of to a certain degree. Serbia's been the one team in the in our side of the bracket, but Team USA has pretty much just handled them every time they played them. And now the U.S. has added a dunk basically at the buzzer. So they're going to go to the half with a 27-point lead. I know no lead is safe. Ask Australia when they were up 24. But I think a 27-point lead against Brazil, Team USA can indeed handle. Some other action from the Olympics so far as it pertains to the U.S. The women's national soccer team defeats Germany in extra time, so they will now head to the gold medal match. It was a 1-0 affair. They get the goal with about 10 minutes into extra time. I think it's interesting to see this version of the U.S. women's national team, because I think for far too long, and you understood it, but I feel like they were just beholden to too many players that didn't have it anymore. And I remember thinking when I saw this roster get picked, and yes, it's tough to watch some of the names you know and love be off the team, but it's like the last real big competitions, they didn't show up, and I was like, it's time to just kind of cycle in new blood.
Who gets credit for that? I mean, as you put that
I hope together. It's Cindy.
Yeah, that was my thought.
They hired Chelsea's women's coach, who's right. Like won every championship.
This is a reverse Ted Lasso, right? I mean,
it's reverse Ted Lasso, but it's also reverse like men's national team.
Yeah,
it feels like, hey, we got a problem, and they sat there and said like, let's go fix it, and if it means bringing in a new roster, it means bringing in new ideas. They did so. Whereas it feels like. I've made the example. The men's national team to me feels like an SEC football program, like in the mid-90s, early 2000s, that the good old boys are still trying to just keep their power. And it's like until someone goes in and is like, you guys not making decisions. It's my program. Mm-hmm. Until we get to that point, it's like I feel like we're just going to be in this cycle that we keep seeing over and over again. Like, when Berhalter got fired, it's like, okay, fine. Did they fire the people that hired him back again? Like, are we just going to do the same song and dance? It seems to me where we are. So that's pretty much, I think those were the headlines from this morning. I was also watching a little of the semifinals of the 400. But that, to me, seemed like that was the big stuff that was happening. And so now officially, U.S. heads to the break with a 63-36 lead. They are likely to be moving on.
Talking about the men's basketball mm-hmm. team, tell me this. When you watch them play, what is it that stands out to you? Are you enjoying the Steph and LeBron pairing and how they work together? What is it that you like about this particular group?
It's nice to, like, this is, like, I always just think, like, oh, this is like what it was to be an Alabama fan during the Saban era. Like, this is awesome. Like, this is, like, we have no reason to lose. I think it's kind of been interesting to see how Joel Embiid has almost thought, like, by joining this team, that would elevate him. And I don't feel like that has worked. I do think it's nice that Steph is finally getting his due. But I'm kind of in the same spot with this team that I just mentioned with the women's national team. I'm totally fine with LeBron, Steph, KD. For what they've meant to American basketball for the last 20-plus years, I am totally fine with them getting their flowers and their parade. If we're in 2028 and we're still trying to do this, that's kind of where I'm going to start getting annoyed. Like, I kind of want this one to be it and let them have their moment, because they've clearly deserved it. And obviously, Steph's had, like, the weird, this is his first Olympics. And I guess if 38-year-old Steph is still in there, okay, it's like, let me see how it's going. But I would like us to see, like, let's turn to some of the new blood. Because it does seem like when they run into problems, the problems they run into, it's kind of like taking turns on offense, since there's not a ton of cohesion. But you see right now, like, when they decide to turn it on, there's no one that can compete with them.
You're kind of looking forward to a kind of re-energized Ja Morant being there.
I'm hopeful. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's as good of a chance as obviously we've ever had, but I think it's like safe to say like that point in time could be the best chance that the Grizzlies could have to having an Olympian that's currently on their roster. I mean, I'm hopeful also that Jaren and Dez are a part of the conversation, because if they are part of the conversation, that means we're watching really good basketball here in Memphis for the next 4 years. But it seems to me like if you're going to bet on this guy's an Olympian, it feels like Ja Morant. And I think what we're also going to figure out this season is a lot of the guys that around the NBA that people are like, oh, this guy's past Ja, I think we're going to find out. No, they haven't. Ja was just out of sight, out of mind. And there's no league where you go out of sight, out of mind faster than the NBA.
That's going to make this season a lot of fun.
I'm very much looking forward to it, because I think this team operates at its best when they're being chased. When they're doing the chasing rather than... And I think you're going to kind of get back to, this is the... Everyone's going to overlook us. They're talking about everybody else. And I think that's when they operate at their best. Let's go with Lauri Markkanen.
You just made the list!
So Lauri Markkanen has gotten his big extension. He will now... The financial figures are to be determined. Really what it boils down to me is, I'm just glad that Lauri Markkanen is staying in Utah. And he can't be traded for at least another year. Even though Lauri Markkanen's not like the type of player that I go, oh, that takes this team from being, you know, outside the top eight to being a top three seed, I don't feel that way. At the same time, it's like, I just didn't really want him winding up in Golden State. Like, let's just not deal with that problem. That to me was how I felt. Also, Charles Barkley.
You just made the list!
I hope everybody was sitting down for this. Charles Barkley intends to remain with TNT Sports throughout the remainder of his contract. The Hall of Fame player announced Tuesday that he will not retire next season, reversing the announcement he made in June during the NBA Finals. Barkley said at the time that the 24-25 season would be his last on television, no matter what happened eventually with the NBA's media negotiation deal. He signed a 10-year extension with TNT. Warner Brothers Discovery, the parent company of TNT, has sued the NBA in New York State Court after the league did not accept the company's matching offer for one of the TV packages in its new 11-year media rights deal, which will begin with the 25-26 season. Barkley said, I love my TNT sports family. My number one priority has always been and always will be our people and keeping everyone together for as long as possible. I'm looking forward to continuing to work with them both on the shows we currently have and new ones we currently develop. Okay, so a couple of things here. Number one, Charles has like threatened retirement, I think, no fewer than 20-something times, whether it be as a player, as a media figure, whatnot. I weirdly think, though, this isn't the end of this. I'm not convinced that Charles is just going to be with TNT for the next 10 years. It does feel like this is now the NBA's got to figure out what they're going to do with TNT. And by that, I mean, they got to figure out what the check they're going to have to cut Warner Brothers Discovery. And then it seems likely to me in the end, like that's what's going to eventually make them free agents. But as long as like this feels very contract based,
it does.
But I just find it hard to believe that TNT's answer with Charles Barkley is to pay him $25 million to talk about hockey.
Right. Or to create his own.
Maybe,
TV,
you know,
show.
Like whatever. They still have NCAA tournament stuff, but that feels like a lot of money to keep him in that role. That just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Brandon Ayuk.
You just made the list!
So this one has been a little bit interesting to me, because I have long felt that if the Niners were going to trade Brandon Ayuk, it always made the most sense to trade him for the draft because of compensation. And by getting into this point in the process, it's like you were clearly deciding to bring him back, and now you've made the decision not to bring him back. And that's typically not how the Niners operate. The Niners operate on they kind of know what they want to do and they stick with it. I will say, per this new report, I am starting to wonder if indeed I was wrong. Per NBC Sports Bay Area, the San Francisco 49ers have negotiated the framework of potential trades with both the Cleveland Browns and the New England Patriots. It's now up to the star wide receiver and his camp to choose his next contract. This development comes after NFL media reported on Monday evening the contract talks between Aiyuk and the 49ers have stalled, and that it was more likely that Aiyuk would be traded than finding an extension. NBC Sports Bay Area also reported that the Niners were given permission, or gave Aiyuk permission to negotiate with the Washington Commanders and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Washington eventually dropped out, while Pittsburgh, which was reportedly initially unwilling to match San Francisco's asking price, has re-engaged with the 49ers, according to ESPN. So the Steelers appear to be back in the mix, along with New England and with Cleveland. If they can reach a framework deal with the Niners front office, they only need to negotiate with Aiyuk at that juncture. Okay, here's why I would say my belief has been shaken. When I always do the move, like we were talking about with Cobb, whenever you see a report, just the way my brain works is, okay, where's it coming from? Because somebody wants the information out there. When it came from the San Francisco side, it seemed likely to me that it was not coming from Aiyuk's agent, Aiyuk's camp, but rather the Niners. I think you only do that move when essentially you've made the decision, hey, we've got a deal, last bids. And it seemed to me that what they were publicly announcing is to the Steelers, we have a deal with either the Browns or the Patriots. He gets to choose. If you want in, you better come in now. And so now it seems to me that indeed they're going to go down this route. I'm very curious to see. The Niners have said that they want an established receiver back. I don't know who that would be. They've said it could be Bourne on the Patriots, but that would surprise me. Amari Cooper's the obvious pick from the Browns. But then you start to get into are the Steelers, let's see, who? All right, Steelers, I guess it's George Pickens. I don't think it's going to be Van Jefferson. With all due respects to Calvin, I don't think it's going to be Calvin. George Pickens very much does not feel like a San Francisco wide receiver to me. George Pickens feels in the like diva wide receiver camp, and I don't really feel like that's a Niners receiver. But it almost makes you wonder, like, does that mean they want draft picks, whatnot? But it seems like now we are on this path where Aiyuk is actually going to be dealt, and I did not think we would be here.
I do have to commend you. You do have a beat reporter, journalist, like skepticism when you see these things.
I've been here a few times. I understand how the game is played, and since I don't really have to be in that world, and I don't ever think that my future would be that world, I end up not having to go between it. Let's take a quick break. I want to get back into the NFL because Bill Barnwell has an interesting story about how you could actually build a good roster with a $50 million quarterback, because that's what everyone is talking about. Also, we got the debut of Hard Knocks with the Bears tonight. We've also got Fox announcing their broadcast teams. Want to go around the NFL? We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. ESPN, Bill Bardwell has taken on the task of combating narratives of, well, we've had to pay a lot of quarterbacks this year, and is that the end of a team when you have to start paying big-time quarterbacks? So he wants to start with the financial myths and realities of a second contract quarterback. Reality number one, this isn't a literal swap of money from one position to another. The example he gives, Tua Tagovailoa getting a raise from $7.5 million to $53.1 million annually doesn't mean the Dolphins need to take $45.6 million off of their books in the months to come. For one, he was able to play out his fifth-year option, so he was already accounting for a base of the salary jumping over just $23 million. Secondly, the NFL salary cap isn't similar to the NBA, where the money reported on a player's deal is usually a good representation of what he'll cost or what space the team needs to acquire the player. If a team wants to trade for LeBron James, and the future Hall of Famer is making $50 million a year, it generally needs to have a ton of cap space or send out players making that much money. The NFL cap is much fuzzier for a few reasons. Deals often aren't fully guaranteed. The actual cap number itself is determined by several factors, including how much money in cap space a team rolled over from the prior year and the structure and cap impact of NFL deals. especially larger ones, is influenced by how they're paid bonuses with base salaries. Putting that in layman's terms, what that essentially means is the NFL has a structure where if you have a team that has that is cash heavy, essentially you can rework someone's deal and turn base salary into a signing bonus and have it not count against the cap that way. So the largest point is that it's always a reminder with NFL deals, the number that gets reported is always way, way higher. Unless it's Deshaun Watson's. Deshaun Watson's was very specifically and explicitly guaranteed money. So unless it is a guaranteed contract, which I don't know if we're ever going to see that again, more times than not, there are workarounds of how you can move off the money. The second reality, the impact of the second contract comes before it's ever signed. Nearly 15 years into the slotted draft era, teams, players, and representatives are hyper aware of how quarterback deals impact the roster. The negotiations and roster shifts that happen used to take place after the second big contract was signed. Now, having taken some of the suggestions, we'll include below to heart teams that are making decisions about what to do with their rosters before the ink on those deals has even been put to paper. Take the Dolphins, who surely knew in the spring they were going to sign Tua Viloa to an extension before the season starts. While he has been on a rookie deal, Miami's locked up veterans over the past few seasons as it traded for Tyreek Hill, Bradley Chubb, Jalen Ramsey, while adding Taron Armstrong in free agency. Defensive tackle Christian Wilkins signed a four-year deal with the Raiders. They let him go. They let Robert Hunt go. And essentially, it's like, basically what he's saying is the workings were there to begin with, which is we should have known the Dolphins were giving, they weren't really making this decision. Where it feels like the Cowboys, there might actually be this, is Dak going to play on this last year of a deal, which is what we saw Kirk Cousins do last season. His point largely being the Dolphins were already making the moves to account for this to begin with. Number three. Actually, I wanted to go to this. This I thought was fascinating. What happened next for our quarterbacks who got their second deal? Mark Sanchez. The year of his extension was 2012. On the rookie deal maximum, he reached the AFC title game. On the second deal max, he missed the playoffs. That is largely thought of as the contract that has made every GM always hesitant to give the second deal, is because Sanchez largely happened to be taking snaps and handing it off while the Jets made the AFC championship game. However, that was the deal that ended them. I would argue it's not the deal. It's the fact that Mark Sanchez was Mark Sanchez. It wasn't paying the quarterback. It was that you paid that quarterback. Joe Flacco in 2013 won the Super Bowl. His second deal max was the divisional round. Matthew Stafford got his big deal in 2013, made the wild card round on a rookie deal, made the wild card round on his second deal max. Matt Ryan, 2013, on his rookie deal max, made the divisional round, made the Super Bowl on his second deal. Kaepernick made the Super Bowl on a rookie deal, missed the playoffs, out of the league for various reasons, but also important to know, missed the playoffs when he started getting paid. Andy Dalton made the wild card round both before and after the second deal. Cam Newton peaked at the division round on his rookie deal, made the Super Bowl on his second deal. Russ Wilson won the Super Bowl on the rookie deal, made the divisional round on his subsequent deals. Luck on his rookie deal made the AFC title game, made the divisional round after his big deal. Derek Carr, wild card round on his rookie deal, wild card round on his big deal. Carson Wentz, this is a little bit of an asterisk. The Eagles won the Super Bowl when he was on his rookie deal with Nick Foles, made the wild card round when he was on his big extension. Jared Goff made the Super Bowl on his rookie deal. The farthest they went with the Rams was the divisional round. Mahomes won the Super Bowl on a rookie deal, won the Super Bowl on his max deal. Deshaun Watson, divisional round on his rookie deal, missed the playoffs on his second deal. Josh Allen, AFC title game on his rookie deal, divisional round on his max deal. Kyler Murray made the wild card round on his rookie deal, yet to make the playoffs so far on his extension. Daniel Jones, divisional round on the rookie deal, missed the playoffs on his extension. Jalen Hurts, Super Bowl on his rookie deal, wild card round on his max deal. Justin Herbert, wild card round on his rookie deal, missed the playoffs on his max extension. And then Burrow made the Super Bowl on his rookie deal. They've missed the playoffs since his extension. Also important to note with Murray, Herbert, Hurts, Jones, and I think, yeah, those are the ones that count. They've had one season. Also, Herbert, Burrow were hurt typically. I bring up all those examples is, to me, it's like, it also shows, yeah, there's a few examples of when you pay the guy, all of a sudden the rest of the roster suffers. Yeah. But for the most part, it's kind of the guy basically produced at the same level that he did prior. It's just, like, it goes back to the entire point of the mistake for the Jets is not paying a quarterback. It was paying Mark Sanchez. Yeah. And really, it's kind of the same thing I think that we'll see with Deshaun Watson. The mistake is not paying Deshaun Watson per se, like paying a quarterback for the Browns. It was just making the mistake of paying Deshaun Watson. How to give a quarterback a second contract and keep competing along the way. Tip number one, accept that you can't pay everyone. I think it's also entirely possible what we're seeing with the Niners and Brandon Ayuk. Is this a signal that they are acknowledging they're going to pay Brock Purdy and make decisions along the way? And then number two, figure out who you can't live without. Very quickly to me, I think you'll figure out what a roster, what executives think about their rosters when you see the guys they're willing to keep. And perfect example, I think, is the Chiefs with Tyreek. In the end, their decision was largely based on Kelce, Tyreek, Mahomes. You can only keep two. And they figured out, well, we're keeping Mahomes, and tight ends don't go for the rate that a receiver does.
Yeah. And what does it come down to with the Cowboys and Dak Prescott? I mean, is this someone they can't live without?
There's always the Cowboys asterisk of, it's always entirely possible that they're just doing everything for attention and that this will get done smoothly. For example, I'd use Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill has a reputation of kind of going bananas. Where I give him credit, the entire time that all these other guys are getting these huge deals, he publicly kept his comments to, like, I'm good. Like, this is all going to get sorted out. And to me, what it implied was he trusted that the Dolphins basically said, we've got to get the Tua deal done first, and then we're going to figure it out for you. Well, and that's what we saw happen. They got the Tua deal done. They reconfigured and got his money. And so they acted rationally. The problem with the Cowboys is, where this decision of, are you just going to get a deal done for the sake of getting a deal done, or are you signaling exactly what basically the Vikings just did with Kirk Cousins, which is he's under contract. It's a good contract. It's a big contract. And we'll see. And the risk that you run there is the last time that they took this approach with Dak, Dak breaks his ankle. They have to play with backup quarterbacks. And you see the whole thing fall apart. And Cowboys fans have to accept, like, Dak is better than the other options. The problem that you're seeing now with Dak is I think everyone accepts he is a good quarterback. But imagine almost everyone, because you can't get the playoff performances out of your head, where are you going with him? And if the goal is just to be pretty good, I think you would have already seen a deal done. It seems to me that you're headed down this path of, we're just going to let him play out on a contract year, but I always hold out the Cowboys will just, I mean, Jerry Jones even admitted, like, he likes having people talk about him. And so you're sitting there going, wait, are you stalling negotiations just to have people talking about you? But, I mean, it's like, if I were doing it, that's kind of what I would do. I think Dak's kind of proven what he is at this point. Like, you can do worse. And, like, that's kind of always the question that you have is, to me, there's always a baseline of quarterback that you have to be good in the NFL. But then when you start getting into games against the elite quarterbacks, they start to get exposed. Like, it's kind of a lot of times what you see in NBA basketball where we view guys as either playoff guys or not, but really what it boils down to is, like, there's just a massive difference between a top three player and the 10th best player.
What is the fan base in Dallas? I haven't kept up with that a lot lately, but in terms of what do they think of Dak? Are they as patient as Jerry Jones appears to be?
I think that fan base is always able to talk themselves into just about anything. I suspect the way that that last playoff game happened, it was the perfect Dak Prescott playoff game where, yeah, the defense was getting shredded, but when you watch Dak play those first three series, you're like, this game is over. Mm-hmm. And then as the game gets out of hand, he starts to put up numbers, and you look at the final stats, and you're like, that wasn't the reason they lost. But it's like, if you were watching, you knew very quickly, like, oh, my God, like, he couldn't pull the trigger. Like, he had the yips. And so the problem that you have is it's a lot easier to say move on, move on, move on when you have something waiting in the wings. What I'd be curious to know is how would Cowboys fans say, would you rather have Dak or Shedeur Sanders? Because reportedly that's who Jerry has his eye on. Does that mean that's who Jerry actually has his eye on, or is that just a fun thing that you can believe because it's the Cowboys? And, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, okay, well, that's also dependent on being in the right spot at the draft, being able to make that happen. It's not like you can just announce we're getting Shedeur Sanders. Mm-hmm. Well, like, if the Cowboys go and win 12 games this year, it's a decent chance you've played your way out of being able to draft Shedeur Sanders. I tend to think that it's basically just going to be kind of what we saw with the Vikings, where they're going to play it out, and then they're going to kind of see where they get next year. The risk is you play it out and he goes and he has the magical season. Well, now you've backed yourself into a corner where you're paying Dak Mahomes money.
Your thoughts on Sanders? I mean, do you think he's someone in at this level, the NFL level, will be a huge success?
I'm intrigued by him because I think he is very accurate. I think he has a very good feel for the game. I'm curious to know, like, to me, there's also, like, we talk about a baseline of quarterback. I think there's also a baseline of arm strength. I'm not convinced that he has it, but I'm also not convinced that he doesn't have it. The problem is evaluating him right now has been impossible because he's played at Jackson State, where they had a significant talent advantage. And then last year, he's played at Colorado, where you and I were blocking for him.
Yeah.
And so he had so many games where you couldn't even really make an evaluation because as soon as he got the snap, the play was dead. But I do think he always knows where to go with the ball. I think he's pretty accurate, and I think he's got the moxie to play the position. But mm-hmm. It's been a tough evaluation just because of what's around him. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. The U.S. men are now under 8 minutes away from advancing to the semifinals of the men's basketball tournament. They lead by 30, 101-70 at Brazil hit a three, so now they lead 101-74. But for today's Tell Your Story, listen, I know you're not supposed to kick a man when you're down, but Canada calling themselves the most talented team they've ever had and then getting bounced. I just always believe downplay. Downplay, downplay, downplay. Set the expectations low. Don't talk about this is your gold medal year. Then you find yourself bounced in the quarters and on the way home. So I will give it to Team Canada. Don't tell the story. Tell your story of your most talented team ever. My thanks to David Kopp for joining the program. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program. And for Dennis, for Phil, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.